The Senate weighs another impeachment case. The state's financial forecast is much improved. And faculty at one prominent university want their boss to take a walk. Time to get caught up on what's happening in North Carolina politics. I'm Jeff Tiberi. This is the Politics Podcast from WUNC. Those stories, but first, an update on the pandemic. Here for our Friday conversation are Rob Schofield with the Progressive NC Policy Watch and Becky Gray from the conservative John Locke Foundation. We recorded this conversation on Friday morning.
Hey, guys.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
Let's start with the pandemic. Among the notes from this week, nearing group three, educators can get a vaccine later this month, essential workers in March. About half of public school students in Durham failed at least one class during the fall and all remote learning. A COVID relief bill backed by legislative Republicans has been signed into law by the Democratic governor. Meanwhile, the restaurant and lodging industry is asking for a $300 million stimulus. And the South Africa variant is now confirmed to be here in our state. Lots going on. What's the most notable development from this week? Rob, let's start with you.
Well, I think we're making headway, but I think deep concerns remain about plunging ahead. I mean, the emergence of this virus variant, I really think a few more weeks of patience would really help us. We're starting to get a handle on the vaccinations. That still, of course, comes down to a function of just how much of this stuff we can produce. Ultimately, we're, as Dr. Fauci says, we're going to have enough of it in a couple of months that pretty much anybody that wants to can get vaccinated. But until that point, it's kind of fighting around the margins. It's encouraging that we're moving in the direction of getting teachers vaccinated. I have deep concerns, though, about rushing a school reopening. I'm sure we'll talk more about that. You know, I was watching the Australian Open tennis tournament last night, and they talked about the fact that they're shutting back down in the state of Victoria in Australia. And I looked at the numbers. They have 28 million people in Australia. They've had 900 deaths in the whole country, and they're already shutting things back down again because they realize, and they're having like a dozen here, a dozen there infections. North Carolina, 10 million people, more than 10,000 deaths, closing in on 500,000 deaths in our country. I mean, it really shows you what you can do if you're serious about these social distancing and precautions. Unfortunately, we keep ignoring that.
Real quick before we go to Becky, Rob, I think it is important to note, obviously, I think most anybody listening knows, Australia is an island. So that is going to help a little bit in terms of, you're shaking your head.
I mean, in effect, it's a global pandemic. There are countries immediately on the periphery of Australia that have huge outbreaks. I mean, the United States was, in many respects, an island initially. This came to us from other countries. But the fact that we have, from the start, not pursued the kind of common sense public health policies that we could have pursued has cost hundreds of thousands of lives. And we continue to seem to not to learn that basic lesson about protecting ourselves until the time where we can get people vaccinated.
There's not one thing that stands out to me this week, Jeff, as you kind of went through the litany of all the different things. I mean, the big thing is COVID-19, the pandemic, how we're going to deal with it, the effects that it's having, continue to really drive the narrative. Here we are in 2021 again. Some of the concerns that I think we continue to see, you know, as Rob alluded to, one of the solutions to this is getting people vaccinated. And so we continue to sort of do this clumsily, you know, if you will. Only 60% of the 65-year-old and older in North Carolina have been vaccinated. So it's moving along, but, you know, we've still got a long way to go. There's attention to the school kids and what's going to happen there. You mentioned in Durham, with the Durham Public Schools, they have some feeling of how the kids are doing, and it is not good news. In other parts of the state, we don't know, but we know it's not going to be good. We're going to have to be doing a lot of testing and figuring out, you know, where are the kids so that we can move them past there. But what we do know is it's going to be really pretty bad. So, you know, I know the General Assembly is looking forward to some summer school options and some other things addressing that learning loss that we're having. And then, you know, as Rob mentioned too, and Jeff, I think you did, you know, we're seeing these variants come in. Again, global pandemic stuff is coming around from other parts of the world, starting to show up in the United States, starting to show up right here in North Carolina. So even some concerns about the current vaccinations, are they going to offer the kind of protection that we're going to need moving forward? So again, not any one thing stands out in my mind. It's all of it and the continuation of it. I think the numbers are turning around. That's looking good. Will we see numbers go up after some of these Super Bowl parties in the next couple weeks? I don't know. But, you know, we're seeing this here in North Carolina. Things seem to be turning around. The vaccines are getting administered, but we've got a long way to go.
I'm going to move on only because there are other things to talk about. And sadly, unfortunately, this is a topic that we will continue to talk about for the weeks and I suspect months, hopefully not years, but perhaps in some way years to come. The pandemic is not going anywhere, of course. Let's talk about fiscal forecasting, state revenue. Do not hit the snooze button yet. This story is a much better than we were anticipating kind of story. Last spring, early-ish on in the pandemic, the state budget office projected nearly a $5 billion hole, budget hole on the horizon. That would be nearly 20% of the annual state budget. We learned this week that tax revenue picked up and the deficit is now relatively small, only about $100 million. That's less than 0.5% of the annual budget. This is likely the difference between laying off state employees and being able to potentially provide bonuses. This strikes me as very good fiscal news.
Oh, I think this is great news. You know, in this sort of dark news that we've had with COVID and the pandemic and all, this is very good news for North Carolina. I think it speaks to the fiscal health of our state going into the pandemic. You know, we had one of the strongest economies at the beginning of this, and now here as we're trying to claw our way out of it, it looks like we're in pretty good shape. So this is very good news, again, to state employees, but I think to the population overall is that we're going to have some money to meet the state's needs and, you know, probably not looking at any kind of tax increases or additional burdens on folks and businesses as we're all struggling to get through this. So now the question becomes, you know, what is that budget going to look like? The first thing, of course, that we're going to be dealing with is the COVID money that is coming in from the federal government. That'll be the first thing that will be taken care of. I think this also speaks to the way that the General Assembly has distributed and appropriated the federal funds that have come into North Carolina in a really responsible way, in a thoughtful way that addresses the problems. And I think we're seeing this reflected in this revenue forecast that we just got.
Well, it shows the several things. It shows, first of all, the critical importance of federal stimulus. That's played a huge role and is critical and will remain critical going forward. It also shows that what they hadn't really foreseen was that upper middle class and wealthy people and large corporations pretty much haven't had a problem adjusting to this new world order of virtual online life. And so the incomes of the top 1% have been soaring. And so they're doing better than ever. And at the same time, we actually have billions of dollars in the bank here in North Carolina, even at laying aside just the fiscal projections. So it clearly shows that stimulus works. We need more of it. And we need to do more to help the people who are not faring well. We have a huge proportion of our population who are not faring well. We also have businesses that are really struggling mightily, restaurants and other businesses that need help, that need direct assistance. So that's how we ought to take advantage of this good news, is we ought to support more federal stimulus and redirect our resources to help the people who desperately need it, because the folks at the top are doing just fine.
Of course, the real solution to this is to get people back to work, get businesses opened up again so that we don't have these long unemployment lines, so that we don't have people who are dependent on government help because they're unable or to help themselves. So the key to all of this is let's get people back to work.
And that's what we need. We do it, of course, again, as soon as we can get people vaccinated and we can do it safely. One thing with respect, for instance, that we could be doing with this money, we could be like providing a school nurse for every school in the state now that we're trying to command them all to go back to reopening. Maybe we could at least do that. Maybe provide a competent school nurse or two in every school. But, you know, we've been unwilling to spend the money on just essential stuff that could allow us to reopen more safely.
Well, and I would add, you know, to this, another thing that we're going to have to look at as we continue to come out of this is mental health and mental health needs. And, you know, Rob, you mentioned school nurses. I think we're also going to be looking at school psychologists. You know, I think we cannot even begin to imagine the impact that this is going to have long term on our school kids and people. And that's something that I hope the General Assembly will look at. I believe they are, is looking at some of the mental health issues that we're going to be left as a residue of this pandemic.
A group of more than 70 faculty and staff at UNC Chapel Hill are calling on Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz to resign for what they say is a pattern of dishonest behavior. Some of this relates to Silent Sam. Listeners may remember there was a controversial legal settlement with the Sons of Confederate Veterans. Guskowitz said publicly that UNC Chapel Hill was not party to that settlement, but we recently learned that a top staffer for the chancellor was directly involved in negotiations. It's unclear if Guskowitz purposely lied at the time, or if this staffer made something of a rogue deal. Either way, not good. Should the chancellor go? Rob?
Well, it was a big flub, that's for sure. And I think, as R. Joe Killian's reported a lot of the details here, there were a lot of faculty members who repeatedly asked Guskowitz very pointed questions. Were we part of this negotiation over this crazy settlement of giving money to this Confederate group? And he specifically said no. So you're right. It's either he was lying. One hopes that wasn't the case. Although the other flip side, that he just didn't know what his own staff was doing, is not much more encouraging. I don't know. I mean, otherwise, in many respects, he's been done a pretty good job, and he's been in an impossible situation with this reactionary board of governors that has placed impossible demands on. They chased away Margaret Spellings. They chased away Carol Folt. The same kind of ridiculous behavior. They're the ones who really were driving this thing. Clearly, this deal with the Confederate veterans or Confederates sympathizers. But you know, I don't know. I don't have an answer as to whether he should resign or not. But it was an enormous flub, and I think one way or the other, he's got to somehow make some sort of peace with the people in the faculty and have some sort of a come to Jesus moment if he's not going to resign.
I couldn't begin to opine on whether or not he should resign or not. But I think, you know, the buck stops with him. I mean, you know, Rob doesn't like the Board of Governors, but the chancellor has a job, and it's his job to run the university. It's also the job of the faculty to ask questions and, you know, to hold him accountable for things. So I think this is a healthy exercise. I think this is what we want. You know, I think it warrants an investigation, and I think there's some good questions. Some of the right questions are being asked, and we'll see how this plays out.
We can agree that it's not a particularly healthy exercise that the chancellor of any university doesn't know or doesn't answer honestly about whether or not his or her university was privy to a lawsuit or party to it or at the negotiating table. Can we agree there? That's not particularly healthy?
No, that is not. No, what I meant was the questioning and the accountability and giving him an opportunity to explain. I think that's always healthy. You know, the allegations and if this did indeed happen is not very healthy, but I think that's why it's important to ask these questions.
Yeah, it's a dreadful situation. He really needs to address it. And if he needs to either apologize very profusely or explain how we're misunderstanding it, because it doesn't seem like there's any reasonable conclusion other than that he either was dishonest or just didn't know what his own staff was doing.
Finally, at Donald Trump's second impeachment trial, recent days have consisted of chilling testimony, previously unseen security footage, and a greater understanding of just how close domestic terrorists were to Mike Pence and U.S. senators. Becky, has the testimony moved you enough to support a conviction?
Well, I want to hear all the testimony, and you know, I hope that there's a vigorous and rigorous question period as this continues. I want to hear everything before I make a decision.
But at this point, there's not any new testimony. I mean, we've heard the prosecution has made its case. The prosecution is not going to make its case. I don't think they're going to provide any additional information for you or others to consider.
But that's one side of the story. We haven't heard the other side of the story. I believe that the defense makes their case this afternoon.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously the defense is putting on the argument that this is not constitutional. They don't have a real defense to the events. The events are what they speak for themselves. The president of the United States directly urged these people to go fight like hell at the Capitol and specifically declined while he was watching it happen to call them off, to call off the dogs. And it appears also prevented federal law enforcement and military personnel from being able to help fend this off. I mean, it is save for consorting with a foreign power to overthrow the country or, I don't know, murdering someone directly. It's hard to think of a more direct high crime and misdemeanor by a president than what we saw from Trump. So it's clear that it's a cowardly act not to vote to convict him. The argument that he somehow gets a free pass in the last month of his presidency because, well, he wasn't going to be president anymore, that sends a message to all future presidents that they can do literally whatever they want in the last month of their presidency. That's not an acceptable outcome. So I'm very concerned and fearful and fully expect that, unfortunately, more than 33 Republicans will vote to acquit. And it looks Tom Tillis is already making the absurd argument that this is something being pursued by the radical left, all those radical leftists like Mitt Romney. But yeah, it looks like they're probably going to acquit him. And it's too bad. But I think at least it will have clearly made the case for posterity and for the country that Trump was guilty. He is just his behavior is absolutely reprehensible. And we just hope that he goes away and doesn't come back.
Becky, final thought or no?
Well, I mean, I would just add, you know, if the goal is to remove him from office, the voters removed him from office.
It just seems that obviously there should be a prohibition on him ever seeking office again. That would be the logical next step. He needs to be barred. The man's a criminal.
Becky Gray is Senior Vice President at the John Locke Foundation. Rob Schofield is Director of NC Policy Watch. Enjoy your weekends.
Hey, guys, stay warm.
Great to be with you.
We discuss the week in state politics each Friday on the WUNC Politics Podcast. Now, earlier this week, Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson joined the pod. Double back for our chat if you have yet to listen in. And if you're not caught up on the latest episodes of Tested and Embodied, very much a you problem. Some great storytelling and discussion topics to engage with on both of those platforms. Let's plan to cross paths again on Tuesday, all right? That's when we'll drop a pod on non-discrimination ordinances, what cities are doing, and why the legislature is likely to stay clear of any controversy. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm Jeff. Enjoy your weekend.